How's it going, aviators? And welcome to the Aviator's Guide, a place where you can learn all the ins and outs of being a pilot. I'm Holly Blino, your host, and today with me, I have a very special, very talented, and very handsome guest, my husband and best friend, Joseph Blino.
How you guys doing?
Joe is from South Carolina and studied mechatronics after high school, and now he is a warrant officer with the Army National Guard. We actually met in flight school at a student council event, and the rest is history. And then after that, he went to Army flight school to learn the Black Hawk UH-60 mic and the Lakota UH-72 helicopters, and now primarily flies the Lakota. So tell the listeners a little bit about your background, Joe.
Right. So I moved around a lot as a child. We ended up settling in South Carolina. So I grew up in South Carolina, spent most of my teenage years there. I was very mechanically inclined, so everything I did revolved around either outdoors or working on something. After that, I wanted to join the Army, but wasn't quite ready to do that yet, so I went into college. I went to college for mechatronics, and I ended up getting a job in that career field while I was in college. Turned out to be extremely boring, and I didn't enjoy it whatsoever. So I went to the Army recruiter and decided that I was going to join the Army. I wanted to join the Army as a pilot, but my recruiter told me that was not even possible, not knowing street to seat or green to gold programs, anything like that. So I ended up going to the Army as a 91 Bravo, which is a wheeled vehicle mechanic.
So what made you decide to join the military?
So I wanted to join the military because it's kind of almost like a family tradition. A lot of my family members and all those other people have joined the military service, I would say.
So are you glad that you chose the Army?
Absolutely. 100%. Wouldn't go back and change anything, to be honest with you. Being a mechanic was a fantastic time in my life. I learned a lot, and I was able to accomplish many things and do a ton of stuff.
He is very handy.
Occasionally.
So what's the process like for joining the Army?
Joining the Army, go see a recruiter and just take all guidance from the tower. Essentially, you just do whatever they tell you to do, and that's about it.
And that's for the rest of your life as well.
It is.
So you, of course, had to go to basic training like everybody else who joins the military. And how long did that take?
Basic training, if memory serves me correct, was 10 weeks. 10 weeks of a lot of fun and putting up with a lot of different types of people. That's one thing you're going to have to be really good at, is being able to go in somewhere and tolerate all walks of life.
All right, so 10 weeks for basic training. And then after basic, what did you do?
After basic is AIT, and AIT is roughly 14 weeks. And me, that was the 91 Bravo school, wheeled vehicle mechanic school. You go up to Fort Lee, Virginia. It's now called something else. I don't know what the new base name is, but to me, it's Fort Lee. And you go to Ordnance Island, they call it. You do your school in there. After that, I was off to Germany.
And you were in Germany for how long?
3 years.
And exactly what did you do while you were in Germany for 3 years, besides not learn German?
I'll never live that down. I can understand more than I can speak, and I can speak hardly none. But while I was in Germany, I did all sorts of things. My primary job was a mechanic. I got an extra course, I guess you could call it, which is Hotel 8 School, which is Wheeled Vehicle Recovery School. And I got to be a recovery asset for the company. And I took a big old truck and went out and got people that broke down, got stuck, got into accidents, pick them up and bring them back to base. And then I inevitably fixed them.
And you loved that.
Oh, absolutely. It was the best time. Pulling people out of mud holes and doing all that stuff is great time.
Okay, so you were in Germany for 3 years, loving your job. So what made you want to be a pilot?
I always wanted to fly. Ever since I was young, I'd see the helicopters fly overhead, and I was like, I want to be that guy. So I originally joined the Army to fly. I mean, they told me I couldn't when I went in to go see the recruiter, but I decided to continue on my service just because I did want to serve. You know, it's what everybody did in my family, so it was a big deal to me. And then I figured while I was in, I would go ahead and go fly.
So it was still his dream, but he just kept at it and he made it happen.
That's right.
Why did you decide to choose helicopters over airplanes? Why, when you were younger, did you want to fly those death traps?
So, in my opinion, and I know not everybody shares this belief.
I'm kidding. Helicopters are awesome.
But helicopters are just awesome. I mean, you can see them and they can hover right over your head, and planes can't do that. In my opinion, flying both now, planes are like driving a car. And then helicopters are a car that you can drive in every direction, up, down, left, right, and not just straight.
You just think you're so fancy.
No. We're just better because we can land anywhere.
Hey, we can land anywhere too. Just may not be pretty.
You can only land there one time.
Yes.
I can land there every
time. Unless it's like a super cup and you can land like a helicopter.
That's true. That's true.
What was the application process like to get where you are?
For becoming a warrant officer, it can be kind of tricky. You're going to have to do a lot of your own investigative work, I guess you could call it. You're going to have to take a lot of initiative and do a lot of things on your own. I have a little bit of experience doing active duty and National Guard stuff because it is slightly different. And when I was active duty, I submitted 2 warrant officer application packets, got fully qualified, not selected. And the process for active duty was slightly different than it was for the National Guard. And so for active duty, my process of doing things was I went and found a flight warrant officer on base and went and talked to him to basically have him be a mentor towards me to help me out with the process and tell me what I need to do, tell me where I needed to be and do all the things that are required of me to get a packet submitted to the board. So I went to him, I talked to him about it, and he basically gave me steps that I needed to follow in order to get a packet submitted. And in the description, we'll include a link to the website, which is a warrant officer recruiting website that has all the information you're going to need. So it has board dates, and what a board date is you're going to build a packet, and then you're going to submit that packet, and it's going to go before a board, and they're basically going to vote on it, judge it, whatever they do, and it's going to come back, and that's when you're going to find out whether you've been accepted or not. There's a checklist in there, which is the centerpiece of it all, and that has everything on it that's going to be in that packet that you submit to the board. And also, you're going to need to make sure that your GT score from your ASVAB is above 110. The ASVAB is the entrance test to get into the military.
Okay. ASVAB.
After that, you're going to need to make sure you take the SIF test, which is another very important test because it's the Army's flight aptitude test. And you need to make sure that you have a score well enough to pass. You can only take that 2 times in your lifetime. So you have to make sure you pass it on the first go.
It's pretty important, guys. What's that called again?
SIFT.
The SIFT. Okay, so you submitted that one time and you were fully qualified, but they still said no. So what then? What did you do?
I did it again. So there's a little waiting period, and then I resubmitted my packet to hopefully get in a second time, but to no avail. Now, after that, I was pretty discouraged, but I was not going to let that get in my way of flying. At the end of my contract, I signed for the National Guard, and I was going to go to civilian flight school, which is where we met, and I signed with Arkansas. Arkansas was the closest state to our school where I was going to receive the most amount of money for being a 91 Bravo. After that, I got my private pilot's certificate and submitted another application to go warrant to Arkansas and got picked up almost immediately.
Okay, so that helped a lot. You going to get your PPL and just civilian fixed-wing aircraft really helped him get his spot.
Yes. The first step after being accepted, for me anyway, was getting myself into an aviation unit. So I was in a non-aviation unit beforehand, and they wanted to get me in to the aviation unit that I'd be basically end up in.
Little Rock.
Correct. So I was at Camp Smith. They moved me to North Little Rock. Once you get moved into a flight unit, and it's not going to be like this for everybody. This was just my personal case. This is what happened for me. This is what my unit did for me. Basically, after you get accepted, your first step is going to WOCS, which is Warrant Officer Candidate School, which is now 5 weeks.
I remember WOCS fondly and never got to talk to you. That's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, they do take your phone for a little while. But
I think that's also the time when you decided that you wanted to marry me. So I'll take it.
Guilty as charged.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder, guys. Okay, so WOCS is the initial training you need to complete before you can start your flight training, correct?
For warrant officers, yes. That is a interesting course, but kind of like just teaching how to be a leader.
Okay, so you did WOCS, and now you're all trained to be a leader. What's next?
Next is SEER.
Oh, yes.
My second favorite course.
What does SEER stand for?
Survival, Evasion, Resistance, Escape.
And how was that survival course?
It was a lot of fun. You learn a lot of different things. And
Is interesting to hear him describe it that way.
Anything you want to know, you can just look up.
And we'll leave it an enigma for you guys. If you want to know more about SEER, look it up because we're not going to say it here. So after walks, after SEER, you get into flight school. What all is that like? What about housing?
All right. So we can start off with housing. Housing, you can either do on-base housing or you can do off-base housing. I did both. I roomed with some people off-base for a little while. And then towards the end, I actually ended up going on-base, which I was quite fond of. It was honestly really nice. I mean, I was in a little bit older buildings, but it was great.
Well-maintained buildings.
Yeah, they were.
Are there any benefits to living on-base versus off-base?
So with off-base, you get to save a little bit more money. So you get your BAH, which is your basic housing allowance and whatnot. And if you're rooming with people, you know, you get to save some of that money. But when you live on-base, it kind of all goes towards your rent.
Okay. After housing's taken care of, what about ground and flight training? What are those like?
Ground and flight training it's all really good stuff. I'm not going to lie. So you start off doing your ground school first, and then you're going to move in to your flight school portion. Very long days of studying hard, a lot of information. It's like drinking from a fire hose, and you get to go fly at the end of this, and it's just a lot of fun. And then you have all that different flying, and the flying is also stressful because every day you're getting graded. Every day is a pass-fail day, and I promise you, if you fail, they're going to make you feel really dumb about it. And sometimes you'll fly first and have ground afterwards, or vice versa. Sometimes you'll do class first and then fly afterwards.
When you go, do you get to choose your own aircraft?
It starts where everybody does their initial entry training, right? In the UH-72 Lakota. Everybody does that. Everybody goes through that first. And then you're going to go towards the selection process, right? So you have an OML, which is kind of like a grading score that takes everything you've done through that first part, everything you've done through the Lakota, and it puts you in order from who did the best to who did the worst. Now, if you're active duty, that's the only time that you're actually going to get to choose an airframe. If you're a National Guard, you have one already assigned to you because it's whatever your state has. My state has Blackhawks and Lakotas. That's why I went for Blackhawks. Now, active duty guys have the option of picking a C-12, which is an airplane, a Chinook, an Apache, or a Blackhawk. Those are your options. The C-12, the airplane, I mean, you're lucky to get 1 to 2 seats a class. Wow. And the Chinooks are very rare and few between also, or at least my class was. I know some of them have had more people, more slots for selection than others had, but mine was very few. You're always going to have a lot for Blackhawks and Apaches.
Now, you said earlier that if you do poorly, then you could easily fail for the day or unsat. How many unsats would it take for you to flunk out?
So it's honestly hard to say. You can get some unsats, right? It's not like they're going to, one unsat, one bad day, they're going to throw you out. It's not like that. But if you get a few in a week, they're going to put you up for a prog ride, which means you're going to fly with somebody else and you're going to get graded there and see what's going on. See if you're just having a bad couple days, see if they need to, you know, hold you back and do something else. But I actually haven't seen anybody, to my knowledge, that has gotten kicked out of flight school. I mean, I know there have been people that have been kicked out, but everyone that I've seen that they were doing poorly or what have you, they just got held back and then they continued on their training, or they did what they needed to do to basically be able to progress. So another thing is if you go and you get a few unsats in a week and then you get put up for a prog ride, they also have the option to give you extra training. The commander will give you extra training and hopefully that'll bring you up to the level that you need to be to proceed on with everybody else, with your class or your group.
So while you're in flight school, how do you get your medical? What's that process like?
Oh boy. Okay. So everybody's got to do a PHA, which is a physical health assessment test. And it is basically that, just more in depth. So for my very first flight school physical, when I was active duty in Germany, I had x-rays done. It was a chest x-ray, I think it was. And then they do all sorts of eye tests on you. So it's not just your standard vision test. It's actually scanning your eyeball, all sorts of little things. You'll draw blood. You'll take a drug test. You know, you'll do all those typical things too, but there's just more to it.
What about your certificates after you technically finish all the requirements to get a certificate for commercial instrument? How does that work?
So the way it works for the military is you're going to go through training and whatnot, and then at some point your class leader will actually tell you, or you can sign up for the military competency check, which is with the FAA. You go to a facility right outside the base, and you're going to go there, and you're going to take the written test. and this is what's going to get you your instrument and commercial license for the, for me, it's the S70 because I'm Blackhawk. So that's the civilian variant of the UH-60. So you get your instrument and your commercial rating, and then they won't actually give you that until you graduate.
Okay, so you don't get any of your certificates until you finish flight school.
Correct.
And all the certificates easily transfer over to the civilian side?
Yes, they're all going to show up on your
card. So those certificates intrinsically look the same as a civilian certificate?
They sure do.
Do you have any advice for pilots going through Army flight school?
Don't give up. I know it can be tedious, and I know it's a lot of work. Definitely well worth it. When you get to flight school, do not spend all your time studying. Make sure you have good time management. Do some studying and then relax. Have some fun because it, no joke, it really is the best time of your life if you make it that way. For the first little while, I spent all of my time studying and trying to take it all in and not forgetting it, because up until this point, I have done horrible in school. No matter what it was, I was terrible at it. And never did well, never had A's and B's, you know, I was a straight C student, but I got there and I really wanted this to happen. So I spent the first while just studying as hard as I could and every day, all night, and not giving myself a break. And that was my biggest problem during flight school. Once I took those breaks and had a little bit of fun and enjoyed my time and relaxed a little bit, I started doing a lot better.
Very good advice, babe.
Plus, you're right there near the beach. Take advantage of that. Go down to the beach, have some good food, and relax on the beach a little bit.
And meet some friends, because you're going to have some friends for life out of that place.
You really will. I still am in touch with a few people from flight school.
So what did you like the most about flight school?
Flying. It's as easy as that. Really, it was flying and the people. I had some fantastic instructors, and some of the best people you'll ever meet were there.
What was the hardest part about flight school?
So earlier when I said that it's a lot of information, it's like drinking from a fire hose. That stands. That is definitely the hardest part. You are required to learn just an insane amount of information in a very short time and then apply all that information, and they expect you to retain it. And then you're going to do that for a while, and then you're going to dump all of that and go into a new aircraft and have to do the same exact thing. You have to drink from a fire hose. You're going to have to remember all of that information and apply it and be expected to know it.
Fun stuff. Yeah. And while you were in flight school, how many hours did you gain during that time?
I think it was about 140, maybe a little bit more, but don't quote me. I'm sorry.
140 flight hours. Okay, not bad. Tell us about what kind of training you've done after you finished flight school.
Since I got done with flight school and I got back to my unit, I have to go through RL progression. And during that time, you're basically going to redo flight school to an extent. It's not as intense. They're basically trying to get a gauge of what you've learned or what you need to learn to be a fully competent military pilot.
To be set free, basically.
Yeah. To make, they want to make sure that you're a safe pilot. They want to make sure you're not going to kill anybody. They want to make sure that you weren't just passed through flight school.
And what kind of recurrent training do you have to do as this position of warrant officer?
So that's a lot deeper of a question than you think it is. We have our RL levels, and then once you get to a certain level, you're going to have hourly requirements, right? Just like what you have, we also have our instrument currency, we have our night currency, and then we also have our NVG currency. All those go into...
One second. NVG is night vision goggles, by the way.
Right. All those go into basically our minimums that we have to meet, right? You guys have your minimums, we have our minimums.
What other kind of training do you have to do?
So, National Guard, you know, we have our 2 days per month, and then your 2 weeks during the year.
How are warrant officers expected to get jobs after flight school?
So active duty, you're in luck. You have your full-time job. Now, for the National Guard, and this is just for most people, those people that join the National Guard in their state, right? So they've already been living, and they usually already have a job in that state. So if you don't already have a job, the you finding a job's kind of on you. So you can look at usajobs.gov and they have a whole list of potential job opportunities for you if you don't have a job already. For me, I got out of active duty and, you know, went to flight school. So that's where I would look if I wanted a military job.
Do you have any advice for pilots wanting to join the military?
What I would tell you is it's a lot of fun, well worth the time, well worth the hassle, well worth the struggle. It's worth all of that. And when you start doing it, you'll realize that it's a completely different style of flying. And it's just, it's all around worth it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to help out your fellow aviators?
Never give up. Chase what you want. Dream big and you will succeed.
That was beautiful, babe. I'm actually tearing up. Well, thank you, of course, for sharing that with everybody.
Of course.
And I hope that you all enjoyed that, whether you're listening on the podcast or watching on YouTube. If you are looking to go military, I hope this helped just a little bit. And if you have any further questions, Joe is being very kind.
Yeah, so I know I gave a very brief overview of this. I didn't go into any I try not to go into any specifics because it's going to be different for everybody. But if you want specifics, if you have any specific questions, or if you need some advice, feel free to reach out. My email is bellinojoseph3@gmail.com, bellinojoseph3@gmail.com.
Yes, and that's the number three, not spelled out.
Right.
And a few more tidbits for you guys who do want to join the military. There are a couple of benefits for doing so when it comes to aviation. Military pilots can count any flight time in a powered-lift aircraft while in horizontal flight toward the flight time requirements towards getting your ATP airplane category rating as per 61159 Alpha 5. I have the link to that regulation in the show notes if you want to look into it. Military pilots also can count flight engineer time towards the 1,500 hours of required time for the ATP airplane category rating if that time has been required as per 61159 Delta 2. And that states, quote, flight engineer time provided the flight time, one, is completed as a U.S. Armed Forces flight engineer crew member in an airplane that requires a flight engineer crew member by the flight manual, two, is acquired while the person is participating in a flight engineer crew member training program for the U.S. Armed Forces, and three, does not exceed 1 hour for each 3 hours of flight engineer flight time for a total credited time of no more than 500 hours. So if you're a flight engineer trying to go pilot, make sure you take that into account. And lastly, another benefit for military pilots is military pilots also have restricted ATP privileges as per 61.160, allowing you to decrease the required ATP minimum flight time from 1,500 hours to 750 hours. That's a big difference, guys. So there are definitely some perks if you want to go military. Thanks again for listening today, guys. If you have any questions, feel free to email Joseph at his email, or you can email me at youraviatorsguide@gmail.com, and we'll do what we can for you. Well, before you get going with the rest of your day, be sure to like, subscribe, rate, review, and follow my show. And to my fellow Americans that are watching and listening on the mainland, stay warm, stay alert, and keep shooting for the stars. And we will see you later, aviators. Good job.